Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. Ready to roll on a Monday with mostly good news. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. Plenty of both. Joy Taylor's joining me. I watched so much sports on television this weekend, especially yesterday, from golf to the NBA to baseball. Glad to have it back, but there's one sport that may not happen.
Yeah, kind of after a great, great sports weekend, which we haven't been able to say in a long time, it's kind of a disturbing news.
Yeah.
Discouraging news.
Yeah. So sports is back, mostly. College football's in big trouble. The Big Ten's met. The Pac-12's met. You know, from the very beginning, I've said, I think the SEC will keep their head down and bulldoze through it. I still believe that this morning. The SEC will work. It matters more. That's their slogan. That's their marketing campaign. It matters more. I've been down there. I've gone to SEC games. I still believe they're going to power through it. I do not believe that's the case. I think the rest of college football probably gets canceled. And I think there's two reasons for it. I've been banging this drum for a long time. It's 2020. College football makes over $2 billion a year just on television revenue. And they don't have a cohesive plan because they don't have a president. They don't have a CEO. How is it possible that you make over $2 billion annually as a business and you don't have a president or a CEO? Mark Emmert, you can go to volleyball matches. Hire somebody to take care of football. What we are seeing from the White House to states to tiny towns to sports, leadership matters. There is no centralized voice with football. How could there be in college football? There's nobody to run it. It's every man for themselves. If you want to know how much leadership matters in this crisis, look at the NBA. Good God. Unlike every other sport, COVID hit them in the middle of a season. David Stern and Kobe Bryant both suddenly died. China pulled out of a $2 billion deal with the NBA because of something a GM for the Rockets, Houston Rockets, posted. You had a massive social movement in America where LeBron James was front and center. All of these were challenges, perhaps. And yet I watched the NBA and I'm like, damn, looks good, players into it. Energy's amazing. Aesthetics are great. No positive tests. Oh, Lou Williams had some fun in Atlanta. But in the end, that's what leadership looks like. College football's five power conferences, all fighting over revenue, fighting over bowl games, every conference for themselves. It's just, I don't understand it. I grew up in my sports career in Vegas. It's a big boxing city. And so when I was like in my 20s, I'm a young sportscaster, boxing was everything. There was no such thing as UFC. But the problem with boxing was always, they didn't have a CEO. It was Don King. It was Bob Arum. It was these, you know, it was these promoters getting rich. And then little UFC with Dana White came up. They had a president. They had a centralized voice. He was a tough guy, street guy. And they just rose right over boxing. Was it better than boxing? I don't know. But they had a leader. College football doesn't have one. It's unthinkable. It's 2020. Fox alone pays the sport $500 million. You can't pay a mill to get somebody smart to, you know, keep their eye on the till. Here's the second issue. Again, it's money. The NFL or the NBA owners can write a check. NBA spending $150 million on the bubble. NFL owners can all write a check for $20 million per team. And have protocols and daily testing and safety measures for trainers and players and coaches and secretaries and interns. And colleges can't do that. Everybody always talks about how much money colleges make. Yeah, Ohio State does. Oregon State doesn't. There's 130 college football programs. There's about 12 where they're just rolling in lettuce. And there's about 100 that are Purdue, you know, Western Kentucky. There's a lot of them don't make a lot of money, and they can't just write $25 million checks. Because remember, college football stadiums are often bigger than pro stadiums. Why? Because college football needs people in the stands. They make huge ticket revenue. That's why little Auburn, Auburn's a little tiny town in Alabama. They can have an 85,000-seat football stadium. Yet in Philadelphia, a big city, probably 10,000 less than that. College football needs fans. They need ticket revenue. They don't have it. They got to pay for all those sports, men's and women's, and almost all lose money except football on Saturday. So I think it's great that players came out yesterday, star players in college football, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence with We Are United. But good God, that feels like grabbing a small bucket as the Titanic sinks. It is way too little and way too late. Folks, leadership is matter. They do studies on this, why kids are generally more successful, little boys and little girls, if both parents are around. And I have watched during this crisis great leadership from some governors, great leadership from mayors of cities, great leadership from some of the commissioners. College football has a massive hole. College athletics has long been a house of cards. I'm not saying it's designed to make money, but it sure as hell not designed to hemorrhage it. But it is time to start over. It is time to hire somebody to galvanize my favorite sport. I really love college football, but right now it is a circus, and the tent, the doors are closed to the tent, and I don't think it's coming back for a long time. I'm crossing my fingers on the best run conference, by the way. Arguably the best run conference, the SEC. I'm crossing my fingers they'll survive it. All right, so I've been watching a lot of this NBA bubble stuff. And as you remember, Joy and I talked about this a lot. I thought they should have just gone right into the playoffs. I mean, to me, we got a pandemic. Fewer games, fewer tests. Let's get in, boom, let's get out, crown a champ, and go home. But the NBA said, listen, you can't have these guys off 4 months, have them come into playoff intensity. So we're going to have some warm-up games. And I think to myself, yeah, I get it. All right, that makes sense. Let's have some warm-up games. And they kind of rigged this thing in the NBA so somebody could sneak in like a New Orleans or, you know, a Portland. So for that, I think they've done a pretty good job. But here's my takeaway in this whole bubble. I got three big takeaways because I've watched almost every team play. Many of the good teams play three or four times. My first takeaway. The Clippers and the Milwaukee Bucks do not care. They're number one seeds. Those coaching staffs, those rosters, and those front offices, they don't care. I've watched Milwaukee get beat by the Nets. I've watched the Clippers get beat by the Nets and the Suns. They don't care. By the way, that's right on brand for the Clippers, who didn't care during the regular season. I don't take anything of the Bucks. I don't take anything out of the Clippers. I think they should be favored to get to the NBA Finals. I think Milwaukee is excellent defensively, has a brilliant young coach. They've got good enough players to win it, though I'm not picking them. I don't take anything from the Clippers or Milwaukee. We're playing in a bubble. Home court doesn't matter. All these teams care about is being healthy. So Clippers, Bucks just don't care. My second takeaway is, oh, the Lakers do. They just can't shoot. Sort of a problem in 2020. The Lakers have the worst field goal percentage of any team in the bubble. I'm not joking. They have the worst three-point percentage of any team in the bubble. This is why LeBron James, to me, is the MVP. He is the super glue holding together a lot of odd and past their prime parts. The Lakers can't shoot. And oh, by the way, they're not very good at defending the perimeter as well. To me, this is not a championship team. What it is the world's best basketball player, the world's smartest basketball player, kind of making it work. The great lubricator in the NBA, LeBron, just sort of making it work. But this is not a very good team. I don't want to hear about the number one seed in the West. It mattered to them. It didn't matter to the Clippers. My third takeaway is I want no part of Portland. I don't. If I'm in the playoffs in the West, I got no interest playing Portland. Damian Lillard is the best shooter. On most nights, the best player in the bubble. They've got 3 7-footers, so they match up with teams like Milwaukee and Toronto and the Lakers who have size. Gary Trent Jr., who was a nice player at Duke, always a good shooter. Yikes. He looks like Steph Curry. Terry Stotts has been very good for years, very respected. Carmelo Anthony has added harmony and scoring from the wing. Portland, to me, they are going to be the greatest eighth seed in the history of the NBA. Their backcourt could be a nightmare for the Lakers. Gary Trent's emerged. How about Melo? They've got 3 7-footers. I watched Dame drop 51 yesterday. I swear. You know, if he doesn't go to Weber State, if he doesn't play in Portland, if he went to Duke and played for the Knicks, would we all get how good Damian Lillard is? I mean, I said last week, is everybody watching him when he plays Westbrook? How much better he is than Westbrook? So those are my three takeaways so far in the NBA bubble.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Ohio State parents came out this weekend, released a statement in support of playing. These are the parents of the players at Ohio State. I am a believer, and I am not a doctor, but it is safer for college athletes to stay on campus than go home. I'll give you an example. My daughter is going to go back to college. Now, she has two roommates. They are not athletes, nor is my daughter. Do her roommates have boyfriends? Do I trust those boyfriends in college, 20 years old, to wear a mask? Not really. I'd feel much safer if my daughter was a volleyball player and was rooming with two volleyball players, because I know they'd go to an athletic facility and they would be tested daily or at least twice weekly, and there would be protocols and there would be an athletic department and adults monitoring them. That's how I feel, and I've discussed it with my family and my daughter. As it is, she's going to go to college, have nice roommates. I'm not pointing fingers, but girls date boys in college, and I don't trust the boys. I do trust the girls more than the boys, but you get my point. Here at Fox, I come to work. It is the safest environment I am at. Joy is as close as anybody gets, 15 feet away. I keep Goulet this distance, even in good times. The point being is, when I go home, I've got kids. They have friends. Yes, I've let a few over. I'm crossing my fingers. I don't know where those kids have been. You just trust their parents. But I don't have to trust Joy. I know she had to go through the same protocols I had. Jim Harbaugh, coach of Michigan, came out today. He said, I'm for bringing kids back, not because of feelings, but because of facts. He said the Michigan football program has had 11 positive tests out of 900 administered, and two of those came to the school with COVID. He goes, of the last 417 administered COVID tests, two positives. Of the last 353 administered, no positives, meaning the kids are safer back on campus around medical professionals, multiple weekly testing. You know, it's nothing against athletes, but I saw this yesterday. If you send a college athlete home, Is he in a big house? Does he have space? Many of these college athletes, men and women, come from multi-generational living, which statistically it appears now that can be very problematic. You know, I'm not being a sports guy and I'm numb to what COVID is, but I'm telling you, in my life, I've flown 12 times. I have chosen, my kids have flown. Do I fly any airline? No, I do not. I choose airlines based on who's more responsible. I'll just say, I like Delta. They've been great. Others I don't trust. Maybe one's an advertiser. I won't talk about it. But in the end, I'm not going to hide from it. My kids are not going to hide from it. And I think these colleges, though probably not as intense or as safe as an NBA or hockey bubble, certainly beat going back to your small town around your family and friends. And you really think those college kids will all socially distance and wear a mask all day? I'm going to go with I wouldn't have either.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
All right, let's do it. Colin right, Colin wrong on a Monday. Here we go.
Where Colin was right.
I've been saying this. The Lakers aren't a championship team because they can't shoot and they can't defend the shot. They are officially the worst shooting team in the bubble. They're shooting 25% from threes, dead last. That includes every team in the bubble. They're also the worst at shooting field goals in the bubble. This is the issue. Kyle Kuzma is their number three scoring option. He averaged like 12 and a half a game, and he is wildly inconsistent from the perimeter, and I'm convinced that LeBron doesn't trust him. This is not a championship team. What it is a team with two superstars, one of which makes everything work and glossy and refined, but at some point LeBron's lost a lot of finals because he hasn't had enough help. And he simply does not have enough help here.
Where Colin was wrong.
Lakers are, by the way, 2-4 in the bubble. Where I'm wrong is Brooks Koepka. I think he's a top three global golf talent. He melted down yesterday, shot a 4-over. That was the second worst round of any golfer yesterday. And Bryson DeChambeau, who also hits the ball like an ox, I don't really buy as a top five player. I think he's fun to watch. But he was excellent yesterday, -4. So 8 strokes better than the guy I think is really built for majors, Brooks Koepka. By the way, I think they're both fascinating to watch. But Bryson, he didn't get a single break on any of his putts. And he missed every seemingly single short putt. That's the exception. And he still had a great day and finished near the top of the leaderboard.
Where Colin was right.
I said from the beginning the Pac-12 would be one of the first major conferences, if not the first, to bail, and the Big Ten would be right behind him. And according to reports today, the Pac-12 and Big Ten are going to bail on football. Why did I think this? Because you know who's winning COVID on college campuses? The academics, the school presidents, the lawyers, and the doctors. And the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are better academic conferences than the SEC and the Big 12. That's not an opinion. Go to U.S. News and World Report, top 100 public universities. And the Pac-12 and the Big 10 have stronger pushbacks from the academic side of things, and they're going to shut it down. Never forget, the first conference to shut it down was the Ivy League, and the Pac-12 and Big 10 don't see themselves as the Ivy League, but they also have schools considered public Ivies, like Wisconsin or Penn State or Michigan or Cal. So as predicted, Pac-12, Big Ten appear to be shutting it down.
Where Colin was wrong.
I was so excited to watch the Pelicans in the bubble. What has happened? First of all, even in games like yesterday that were really important, they come out lethargic. Zion Williamson, who's had a really nice bubble the times he's played, said, yeah, we just didn't come to play. Alonzo Ball has been awful. He is shooting 26%. I think his field goal percentage. That could be his three or his field goal percentage. They haven't really been intense. They haven't had what appears to be kind of a strategy. They haven't played with a lot of emotion. And considering their youth, I thought they would be one of the teams that just came in and just outworked everybody. Instead, it's been Phoenix, and it's been the Nets, who don't even have half their roster.
Where Colin was right.
Kyle Love played with Cam Newton in Carolina. He confirmed last week what I had heard for several years in Carolina. They did not criticize him publicly. That Cam will struggle in New England if he can't take the criticism, because in Carolina it was understood he was the franchise. Let's not talk about bad games. Let's move on. The two things I always heard about Cam from my sources in that building: he played hurt a lot, so people respected how hard he played and how often he played hurt. But the other thing I heard is they coddled him. They babied him. No criticism. It's about Cam. Get him the right coaches. I think that's inauthentic. I think if you want, in any relationship, if you want to grow, you got to push. You got to argue. Sometimes publicly, it gets a little ugly. They just didn't do that. And Kyle Love said that wasn't the game plan in Carolina. And that's the game plan for everybody, including Tom Brady in New England.
Where Colin was wrong.
Well, the Rockets general manager Daryl Morey mocked me on Twitter over the weekend because I did not have, in my best duos in the NBA bubble, I did not have Harden and Westbrook. Now, Westbrook's a little banged up right now. It should be noted, yes, Houston is 4-1, and I didn't have in the bubble. But I think I got to give credit where credit is due. Westbrook and Harden have not only been very good on the offensive end, they've played real defense. They've played real defense. In fact, Harden currently leads the bubble in steals. And this has been kind of my knock on Harden through the years is he's going to go down as an all-time great offensive player. But to be a great player, an MJ, a Kobe, a Duncan, you got to give something on the defensive end. Now, Magic Johnson was not a great defender, but the effort was there. Harden has been really working it on the defensive end. Westbrook and Harden. Westbrook's not a great defensive player. He played better defense. So, yeah, it was. You guys go ahead and mock me. That hurt. That was painful. But they look pretty good. 4-1.
Where Colin was right.
Jay Glazer in his mailbag, and nobody's as connected to the stars around the NFL as Glazer said, it appears that Green Bay is just going through Aaron Rodgers fatigue, and that explains why they drafted no wide receivers and drafted Jordan Love in the first round. Glazer explained there's no other way to put it. Sometimes people wear people out. Jay wasn't mean-spirited, but it was more than a subtle, nuanced take, which is they're worn out. By the way, there was a national sportscaster for years that got ripped for saying Aaron Rodgers is difficult. Who was that? Oh, wait, it was me. Glazer confirming what we believe is the truth. Aaron's a lot of work. I do think he's handled this whole Jordan Love thing brilliantly, smartly, and aggressively, not passive-aggressively, but he wears people out.
Where Colin was wrong.
What happened to the Yankees? Good God, they're 2-5 in their last seven. They haven't won a 9-inning game in over a week, and they just lost 3 of 4 to the low-budget Rays, which doesn't make any sense because the Yankees can basically buy who they want. At this point, they win when Garrett Cole pitches. For the record, Giancarlo Stanton is hurt again. Can I just ask a question about Giancarlo Stanton? He doesn't even play defense. How does a designated hitter get hurt as much as Giancarlo Stanton, who was hurt all last year, and he's hurt again this year? The Yankees blew a 3-0 lead yesterday. A lot of talent did not have. To me, they looked like a stamp, a guaranteed lock to get into the World Series. Did not have a good week.
Where Colin was right.
Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, we've said from the beginning, it doesn't work. Let's move on. It's a Hollywood relationship. It looks good. They're fighting constantly. Well, now Ben Simmons is hurt. Oh, wait, Joel Embiid got hurt yesterday. It can't be this. Listen, they're 3-2 in the bubble with wins over Washington and Orlando. It doesn't work. The games don't work. They're both now have injury issues. Ben Simmons, as Doug Gottlieb said about 45 minutes ago, you wonder now if Ben Simmons' body is injury prone because he is tall and lanky and scores at the rim. But this thing's a mess. I've never bought into it. I still contend they're starting five and the first two off the bench are as good as any team in the East, and their season's essentially over.
Where Colin was right.
Well, last week I went in a rant. I said if he didn't go to Weber State and play in geographically remote Portland, would we get how much better Dame is than Westbrook? Right now, Damian Lillard is probably the best player in the bubble. He scored the most total points. He's played the most total minutes. He's averaging 33 points and 9.5 assists. And unlike Harden, who has Westbrook, he's carrying this franchise. I like Nurkic. I like C.J. McCollough. Melo's a good story. So's Gary Trent Jr. Damian Lillard has the best range in the bubble. He's the best pure shooter in the bubble. He's the smallest guy in virtually every game, but carries the franchise on his shoulders. Yesterday, he had 51, and it's him. I mean, I like C.J. McCollough, but it's his team, and he remains. You know, I think in the history of the NBA, and I haven't given it great thought. Is he the greatest 6-foot scorer in league history? The greatest in offensively, is he the greatest player at exactly 6 feet tall in league history? I think the answer is yes. Colin right, Colin wrong.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Okay, now there are those who have suggested I was watching another network today. Oh, Lord. They're already jumping at the other place, too. We're not going to have an NFL season. It's just not going to happen. There's a lot of Let me give you four reasons why the NFL is a lot different than college football. And the one is obvious. You can figure this out. They have billionaires. Every team's owned by a billionaire. Billionaires could write $25 million checks for each team if they wanted to. I mean, every team makes over $200 million a year just on TV revenue. Just on that. And they're billionaires when they buy the team to qualify. So Baltimore's owner could write a $25 million just for him, not even league help. And you're testing Lamar Jackson six times a week. He's walking through, you know, this spray and that spray, and everybody is socially distanced, and they can just pay for it. Colleges do not have, yeah, Ohio State does. Colleges don't have that kind of money. The second thing is, everybody here is on the same page. The players collectively agreed with the owners on the testing and the protocol. They had an opt-out time. Players, you know, they have what they call these like trackers, these watches. So, I mean, literally like, Bob, get away from Jim. Russell Wilson, get away from DK Metcalf. Like, they got you tracked on this stuff and where are your movements and who are you around. And if you're standing, we had Tom Telesco on the Chargers last week. He's like, I know if I'm standing around somebody too long. You don't have that at college. Number three is NFL players get paid. They got a lot to lose here. These players, you know, it always cracks me up when it's like players, owners, they're not enemies. They're business partners. That's why the NBA bubble is important, because the players want to get paid and should. You don't want to give the owners all the power. So players negotiated with the owners here. They share revenue. Now, you can argue the players should get more revenue. That's a different show and a different time. But they share revenue. This is really important for the players. They want to, you know, you look at Patrick Mahomes' contract. You do get that's what like two guys a team make, big money. Most of the guys in the NFL can get cut. They don't make big guaranteed money. 90% of NFL players, they got bills to pay. And the fourth reason is NFL players go home, often to big homes. They're often married. They hang out with their family. College kids go to tiny dorms at state-funded universities in little pie-shaped rooms. And there's kids, and they make bad decisions, and you don't know who's been here. Or NFL players are more mature. They're older. They often go to moderately sized or big homes. And the reality is football players, for whatever reasons, they start families usually sooner than other sports athletes. So you go facility, you go home, you go back to facility, you go home. You've only got eight road games. And again, in planes owned by billionaires. Last year, if you remember this, the flu broke out for the Patriots last year. They flew two planes. They went, okay, the billionaire said, let me get my other plane. And they flew, and you could just fly two planes, and you could. So the idea that college is pro, and the other thing is college has no CEO. NFL's got Roger Goodell. It matters. Centralized voice.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Joel Klatt gets fired up. College football, I'm told the presidents of the Big Ten, at 6 Eastern will have a meeting. There are reports earlier today that it's been decided. There was like a 12-2 vote. I'm not sure if that's accurate now. Joel Klatt is now joining us, the voice of college football. Let's start with this, Joel. There was a report earlier today. It was done. It's over. That's not in set in stone, right? That's not entirely accurate?
That's right. That is not entirely accurate. There have been some speculation that tonight's meeting will provide some finality to the decision. Most have expected that it will be a postponement and a planning towards the spring for the Big Ten conference schedule and football season. But nothing has been voted on. There has not been a vote, and nothing has been set into stone or official at this point.
So stars yesterday, some big stars came out and said, we are united, we want to play. Do you believe that, as a former college football player, do you believe players mostly do want to play?
Absolutely. I would put it somewhere. I've talked to, six or seven different coaches, and all of them have taken straw polls amongst their team about, you know, who wants to play, who's undecided, and who definitely does not. And what you're seeing right now is about 85 to 90% of the players will raise their hand and say, we want to play. There's usually about, you know, 1 to 3% of the players that say, we don't know, we need more information. And then somewhere just over 5% of the players, maybe just under 10% of the players that would just say, hey, we would rather opt out. So I think the majority, the overwhelming majority of football players are looking to their leaders the administrators, their presidents, to provide them options in order to play this fall. And right now, it doesn't seem like that's happening. And I think that that's really frustrating a lot of these players, which is why you've seen this prominent push, in particular by Fields and Lawrence, who have become great leaders in this, to say, hey, listen, we want to play football, and we stand united together in that sentiment.
So why in the course, Joy and I were talking about this, it was like, we have college football, they're making the schedules, okay, season's canceled. Like, what happened right in the last 2 days? What is it?
Well, I think that, so I this is, might be a bad analogy, but, you know, listen, you love analogies. So, my wife was in business-to-business sales when we first got married. She would sell copiers, right? And that's not an easy sale. You got to walk in and you got to find the decision maker. That was the key point when she walked into a business, was you got to find the decision maker. Anybody in sales knows exactly what I'm talking about. And I think what you're seeing right now is that the decision maker is finally at the table, and that's the president. So the coaches and the ADs and even the conference commissioners can talk all they want about their efforts and what they want to do from a planning perspective and the procedure perspective in order to play. But really, this lies with the university presidents. And as the decision makers get to the table, they're not being truthful, Colin. Okay, let's be very clear about what's going on. If they were actually concerned about the health and well-being of the student athlete, the athlete and the football player in this case, they would want to keep them within the structure, procedures, and protocols of a football season. Okay, what they're most concerned with right now is liability, and then right under that is the Players United front that has started to come up in terms of a unionization of the players. That's what's driving most of their decisions, the presidents. Liability, the ever-increasing plaintiff lawyer community that's frothing at the mouth to bring lawsuits against conferences and universities. And that's what the presidents are scared of right now, because the health and safety aspect, it's really not holding much water, because if you're going to put a player through testing protocols, have the medical care right there, even when things are being brought to the forefront, like these potential heart conditions that could be harmful in a long term, well, it'd be much better to know if you had the virus than to get the care needed right away with things like an EKG, rather than just going about your everyday life outside of football structure, not knowing if you had the disease, in particular, if you were an asymptomatic case, potentially being in a multi-generational home, and not knowing if you did have that underlying heart condition. So it just doesn't hold water whatsoever that they would cancel the season in order to benefit the health and safety of the player. If they did that in the name of health and safety, they would actually be doing the exact opposite. And that's not even getting into the mental health aspects of potential substance abuse, the fact that this age group in America, the second leading cause of death in this age group, the college age group, is suicide. We're not talking about the loss of opportunity for tens of thousands of scholarships. I think that this decision would be the wrong decision, and it would be based out of fear of liability and the fear of player unionization.
I would watch spring football. I think it's doable. I do worry about spring football is really not in the spring. It'd be January, February, early March. That's flu season. If we don't have a vaccine, that's flu season. That's COVID. Flu is rough on kids. COVID rough on older people. You could just have a mess if we didn't have a vaccine. So I would watch it. I do think it could be problematic. What do you make of the suggestion of spring football?
Well, I think that let's just start with this. We know right now, the data suggests that the college age kid, and specifically a healthy kid, is under far greater danger from things like car accidents, homicide, suicide, heart disease, and even lightning strikes than they are from COVID. I would make an argument that trying to play a spring football season and doing to your body what a football season does, and then trying to back that up again with a fall season in 2021 would be more detrimental to the health of the player than trying to play this fall. So with that as the background, and I've told that to you before, with that as the background, if there are plans to move to the spring, I believe that it would have to be a reduced season, somewhere in the 6-7, maybe max 8 game range. I think that it could happen. I think that it could be possible. One of the things that I've heard floated out there as an idea, and I can't take full credit because I heard it earlier today, but is you could make matchups that were more attractive, and it wouldn't have to necessarily be just playing within your conference. And so maybe we could get the USC Alabama, and maybe we could have Ohio State play, you know, Georgia or something along those lines to increase the visibility and marketability of a spring season. But keep in mind, the players that have any option to go to the NFL will be out. So it will be virtually like a spring season for a preseason of 2021.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. If Alabama loses six or seven guys, they're still Alabama. Their backups are better than 90% of college football starters. Finally, if I had to say guess today, Klatt, I still am 50-50 on the SEC. I think they're going to bulldoze their way through it. But, you know, that's not informational. That's just opinion. If I said to you this morning, are we going to have college football? Who's going to play? Who's not?
I do believe that at least one, probably two conferences are going to stand firm and try to do this. And it's going to be led by the SEC. I think that the ACC will follow suit and try to get that done. And I think that the Big 12 might as well. And this is where it actually gets a little bit political, because at some point, these universities and maybe even conferences are going to look to the governors within their footprint, and they're going to say, listen, we're going to play if you're behind us. And we don't really care what the overarching governing bodies are telling us. So, for instance, like let's say that there is a school that their conference decides to cancel the season, right? And let's say it's in the Pac-12, one of the Arizona schools, maybe a Colorado, maybe a Utah, something like that. And Pac-12 says, like, no, we're not going to do this. And that school's governor says, you know, I'm okay with you trying to play football. And they say, okay, we're going to go schedule games. I think it might be the Wild West in terms of that type of a model. But if I were to answer your question, I do think we will still have a conference, maybe two, try to stand up and try to move forward in the fall. But it's going to be awfully hard if that first domino tonight falls with the Big Ten.
Okay, so I started my show today saying this. I've never figured out why college football didn't have a commissioner. For years and years, I grew up with boxing. But boxing had promoters, all self-serving promoters trying to get rich. And then here came UFC, this young fledgling sport that had Dana White. So they had a centralized voice. And you could argue, I can watch a 30-year-old Muhammad Ali fight. I don't think I'd ever sit down and watch a 30-year-old UFC fight. So you can't tell me UFC rose simply because it's better. That's an argument. But it did rise because it had leadership, and really strong leadership, and boxing didn't. So the NFL's got a commissioner and a singular voice and a union leader. Why doesn't college football have like a president? It's a $2-3 billion a year sport. If they had a president and these guys were aligned, you'd have an actual plan. It's just not everybody fighting for themselves.
You're absolutely right. And preaching to the choir, I completely agree with you. I think that there needs to be an overarching governing body of college football. And I really believe, you know, you make a great analogy, a sports analogy, back to boxing versus UFC. I've made the analogy all the way back to our country's founding and after the Revolutionary War and before the Constitutional Convention. In that little, you know, gap, we weren't a country. So you had all the states behaving in different ways, adhering to international law in different ways. And we needed the overarching governing body of a federal government in order to get that done. And it happened at the Constitutional Convention. We need a Constitutional Convention of college football because it is far too big and too important to allow to behave this way, where everybody acts in their own benefit. And that's what we have right now, with all the conferences doing whatever they deem necessary for their own good.
All right, the Klatster, Joel Klatt, great seeing you, buddy. He's always well-appointed. He looks so professional. That's how you bring a real professional look to our show, and we certainly need it, because once the camera goes off, Joy, it's cats and dogs living together on this set. Good.